Welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 33. I'm here with Damian Katz, the co-founder and CEO of Couch.io. Hi, Damian.
Hi.
And my name is Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news. A whole shebang of conferences last week in and around the Bay Area on cloud computing. Started off with the Velocity Conference, then the Structure Conference from the GigaOm folks, then DevOps Days at the end of the week. Of course, going into this week, we just had the Hadoop Summit yesterday. I think if there was anyone who didn't know enough or felt like they didn't know enough about cloud computing, you could follow 90% of the content from these conferences online and probably be an expert at the end of that. For my takeaway, I spent most of my time at the Structure Conference, and I think we'll talk about this more when we do a roundtable show in the next episode or two. But I think there's a lot of interesting things happening with the network, and there was an interesting presentation on OpenFlow, and surprisingly, a lot of talk about MPLS on the networking side, which, if anyone isn't familiar, that's a sort of a technology that gives people a much greater quality of service and sort of a private internet approach to managing traffic. And as a lot of folks were talking about hybrid clouds and mixing clouds between on-premise and off-premise, I got the sneaking suspicion that many enterprises aren't going to be satisfied with traditional network connectivity. So those are my things to watch. Other news, Cisco is having their big analyst and company event in Las Vegas. They announced the Cisco Sias. Did you see that announcement of that tablet, Damian?
I did.
What'd you make of that?
Well, it looks like a big iPad with camera on it.
Yeah. So, now, I noticed you're a Android user?
Yes.
Correct? So that this is, I think, an Android-based tablet that they're delivering to enterprises. iPad-like, I guess you could say, but don't forget, Cisco is a master at selling to corporations, so maybe they've hit the formula right. I saw somebody wrote a blog post in a headline that this is their secret way into the enterprise PC and laptop market, that they're just going to bypass those form factors and go straight for the tablet, but with all the enterprise lockdown features and so forth. We'll have to see what happens there. Saw an announcement from EMC Atmos that they're no longer offering Atmos Online directly. Now, at the Structure Conference, I hosted a panel that had EMC, Pier 1, and AT&T, and this news was not out, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but it seems like EMC has said that the Atmos Online offering is just going to be for development, and then if anybody wants to use it in production, they'll go to one of the EMC partners. So probably a safer choice for them over time. A little too complicated, I guess, to manage everything directly. And then one more bit. You know, I don't like to brood on the outages that we see in the market. I think that in general, the cloud computing market is doing as good or better a job than any enterprise individually. But you couldn't miss the major outage of Amazon on Tuesday, where many hours things were out. And so it wasn't, of course, in this case, the cloud computing service didn't go down. It was just the retail site. People always talk about that they've merged those two infrastructures, but I think this point just goes to show that they've really kept them distinct. So hopefully that was all sorted out. Well, that's a quick wrap-up of the news. I want to jump right into the questions. Really happy to have Damian here, founder of Couch.io. So Damian, before we jump into Couch.io, give us a little background on yourself, sort of leading up to CouchDB and Couch.io.
Okay. Thank you for having me on, by the way.
Oh, great. Our pleasure.
So before I did the startup, I was working for IBM and also working on CouchDB and helping them. Particularly, there was several projects with IBM Global Services who were rolling out CouchDB stuff. Before that, I worked for MySQL for about 9 months. And before that, I was working on CouchDB from my house in Charlotte, North Carolina, and before that I was I worked on a product called Lotus Notes, and I lived in Massachusetts.
Sure.
And
Lotus Notes, by the way, is having a little bit of a comeback. Not to get on a tangent here, but in the collaboration wars, it's still around.
Yeah, it's still alive and kicking.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, I wanted to sort of talk about, you were the originator of CouchDB, correct?
Correct.
So give us a little bit about, where that came from, the inspiration for the project and the product.
So like I said, I worked, the first part of my career, I worked pretty much on Lotus Notes exclusively. And I started off as a consultant, not actually associated with IBM or Iris or Lotus. I saw lots of apps out there being built on top of Lotus Notes, and I was building my own apps. And then eventually I got sick of the consulting world. So I went and got a job with Iris Associates, which was owned by Lotus, which was owned by IBM. I worked on the core of Lotus Notes. And so while I was there, I did a lot of the front-end stuff, and then I eventually moved into the back-end. And I was working on the database engine. I rewrote the formula engine, which is kind of like a scripting language that's built into Lotus Notes. And I did the unread mark replication. So I have a lot of deep experience with Lotus Notes, both from a high-level front-end point of view and then down deep in the bowels of it. I've always had a really soft spot in my heart for Lotus Notes. It's, you know, a lot of people have very strong feelings against it, but it's actually brilliant at its core, the technology piece. So it's got this UI that a lot of people find non-intuitive, and it's kind of to put it politely, it's a very mature product.
Sure.
And so in some ways it shows its age. So I took my experience with Lotus Notes and really thought about what is it that made it powerful? What is it that was really good about it? What was it that was unique? And what I kept coming back to was the document database.
Right. And I think people don't know that about Lotus Notes. I think the general non-Lotus user thinks of it as just another email platform.
Exactly.
But there are companies who are in the knowledge business who have libraries and libraries of content in the document portion.
Right.
I mean, big companies.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. So a lot of times companies, they think that Lotus Notes is just email, and then people say, well, if it's just email, why don't we move over to Outlook? Because
exactly.
It's got a prettier UI, and Microsoft seems to spend a whole lot more money on polishing that up and keeping it current. And so they start to migrate over, but then they realize they have all these custom apps built on Lotus Notes that won't migrate over. And
right.
So they end up running both at the same time.
Right. I guess to put it in simpler terms, the equivalent of Lotus on the other side, the Microsoft side, would be Exchange plus SharePoint plus a whole bunch of content management intelligence.
Exactly.
I guess. Yeah.
And even with that, it still doesn't do... So you end up... you can replace a lot of the functionality, but you can't... With those tool sets, there's one thing that Lotus Notes does that can't be duplicated, and that's the replication. That's the offline piece.
Right.
So the ability to replicate it down to your laptop and then use it while it's disconnected, and then when you connect back up, sync it.
Right.
And that's what I thought was really amazingly powerful about Lotus Notes, and was really being neglected. And so that's what was the inspiration for CouchDB. So
that specific piece you're saying was the inspiration.
Exactly, the document backend. So I wanted to remove all that UI and everything, all that bloat, and just concentrate on that backend document piece and bring that into the modern web world. And so that's really was the genesis of CouchDB. And
good. And I want to save some time a little bit later in the conversation to dig back into some of the technology of what is a document database and what where does Couch fit into that. But before we do that, give us an overview. Now you have Couch.io as a company, so give us a little background on forming the company and sort of the company's approach and products and services to the market as it relates to CouchDB.
So we got funded last November. And then I moved to the Bay Area in January, so I moved my wife and my kids here, and we're
no easy feat. Congratulations!
I don't recommend that to anyone, but I'm crazy enough to do it. So now we're 12 people, our focus for our business model with CouchDB is on offering support and services and hosting. And we're starting to make a big push into the mobile space. So a lot of people think of CouchDB as purely this cloud database and being a heavyweight thing. And it is an excellent cloud database, and it does do an excellent job at scaling up. And there's another company called Cloudant who has built some really great technology on top of CouchDB for large scale. But we also, CouchDB scales down. So scalability is two directions. It's
right.
not just scaling up to large data sets. It's also, can you scale down to smaller devices? And so right now we have a big focus on putting CouchDB onto phones. We already have it on Android. And
I've seen a lot of people tweeting, I've got CouchDB on my Android phone around Google I.O.
Right.
a month or two ago. That was a hot tweeting topic. What's a use case around that particular mobile implementation? Give us some insight into how that would relate to an end user.
So just the biggest thing is is people who travel. So people who are on the road a lot, or it doesn't even have to be long distance travel. So one killer use case for CouchDB is real estate agents. So real estate listings typically have a lot of different attributes that are tracked. And it kind of defies putting it into a strict schema. And so with CouchDB, that's an excellent fit. And then real estate offices, you know, they're all over the place. Different offices have different levels of internet connectivity. So putting everything into the cloud is problematic for a lot of real estate agents.
Because the market deals with a lot of information across a lot of users, but those users aren't always on.
Right. And so getting CouchDB to replicate down to local offices so they always have a local instance that they can query, get results back for us very quickly, regardless of the network conditions.
So this is something that a large real estate company with a national network might use for their listings to manage that between headquarters and the headquarters data center and then out to all the branch offices. Is that correct?
Right, out to the branch offices. And then everybody in those branch offices, regardless of the internet connection, if it's slow, the kid next door is running a BitTorrent hub or something like that,
right.
Your listings and everything that you're querying is still fast and it's still connected to the cloud. And that's a key differentiator for us. And then real estate agents are always going out, they're showing people properties. And so they might be out on they're on the road a lot, and they need that data on their phone. They need it to be fast. And if the network drops out, well, then they're having to go back to pen and paper and things
right,
like that.
Right.
So a use case might be a real estate agent is showing a house out in the middle of somewhere, and next door there's five dogs that are barking incessantly, and they want to make a note of that, so they're not wasting their time showing this property that's probably going to be really difficult to sell. And when they have the network, whether they have the network or not, they can always have that data, punch it into their phone, and then once they connect back up, it'll replicate up, and
okay.
then the rest of the people in the office can see that.
So, they might have CouchDB on their phone, but within the context of a specific real estate app
right.
for their phone. So,
exactly.
So CouchDB isn't necessarily end user visible, it's just the infrastructure.
Exactly, it's just an infrastructure piece. So,
and making it easier to build apps that go from data center to branch office to mobile.
Absolutely.
Without having to recreate all of that sync, I guess syncing and replication really becomes the core,
right.
one of the core pieces.
Exactly. So traditionally, if you wanted to put that data onto the phone, then you have to write it once for the cloud, and then you have to write it once for the phone. For its storage engine, and then you have to figure out how am I going to synchronize the two.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just use CouchDB and write it once, and then the synchronization
and it'll propagate
is there for free.
And handle it. But outside of the real estate example, which I think is a great one, is there another case just to give people some more light on different opportunities?
For replicating to phones, I mean, that's a killer example. So
right.
Real estate is good. Also insurance salesmen, because
sure.
they're always going out talking to people and their needs. And then they actually have to go and do claims and stuff like that. So having all that information available on their phone, regardless of where they have to travel to, is big for them. And then there's just the ability to replicate across data centers, which is also key. So master. So you might have offices in New York, London, and Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
You want everybody to be sharing the same information. Well, if with a traditional database setup, then you're just going to have one instance somewhere. So maybe it'll be the New York, and then everybody in London and Tokyo has a really high latency experience. So
right.
everything just seems really slow and sluggish. But with CouchDB, you can replicate that out to data centers across continents, and then those instances are constantly talking to each other. There's a little bit of lag in terms of when somebody updates this.
Sure. I mean, you can't solve everything all at once. There's always
right.
trade-offs.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about the decisions that you made and the Couch team made to sort of find the optimal point between latency and consistency and, you know, synchronization and so forth?
The document model is really key to being able to enable replication. So typically, relational databases, if you want to add some sort of new type of information into the database,
a new field, so to speak,
a new field, then you have to do some sort of an alter table operation, and that becomes problematic in that how are you going to replicate that out? What happens when you have the schema that you're changing, and then other people have the old schema and they're still adding data to it? Then you have to reconcile. How am I going to get this old schema that still has new data coming in to replicate?
It's sort of an impossible problem to solve.
Right. So with CouchDB, there is no schema. Each document has its own implicit schema. It uses JSON. So basically, anything that you can express in JSON, you can store in CouchDB. And that means that if you want to add new attributes to items, then you just basically add new attributes to the items. And those will replicate out. If other servers don't understand those attributes, they'll just ignore them. And if they have attributes that they're adding that you don't understand, then your side will just ignore those. But the data is still there, and then eventually you can reconcile.
Okay, so in the, going back to the case of this real estate example, if I could decide I want to add a field about is there, you know, other factors in the property that we need to know about. So I'm adding a field about, you know, noise.
Right.
Somebody might not be necessarily using that field elsewhere, but it doesn't matter that it's
right
in there.
Right, it won't matter. It's just it's
they could find it if they wanted to.
Exactly. It's another piece of information on the document. And if their front end doesn't recognize it, then it just gets ignored. But also with CouchDB, you can store, we have what's called design documents, and these actually store information about how to index the database, security of the database, and then just storing the forms that people would use. So you can store an HTML file that contains the form that people enter in the data. And so those replicate just like regular documents. So if somebody makes a change to the form, then they want to push that out. As long as that person has the proper permissions, they can replicate it up, and then it'll push out to everybody's phones, their remote servers, whatever, and then everybody now has the new design of the database.
When you started the Couch activity, I mean, cloud, we didn't talk about cloud computing, right? It didn't exist back then.
Right.
Yet, in some ways, this idea of having data in the cloud and then across any device is a perfect fit with what was originally designed for CouchDB. I mean, so what's happened, like, big picture in terms of cloud computing and big picture trends that you feel has sort of really tied right into some of your original thinking?
Well, yeah, so this idea of something that's in the cloud that doesn't require a lot of management. So with CouchDB, we can easily scale up. And that was always an intention, but it fits right in with the cloud computing model of you don't really think about the machine. You don't really think about what the infrastructure is. You're just thinking about the model. And so with CouchDB, it's really easy to start off with a single instance and then eventually shard that out into separate instances without having to change your application logic. With SQL databases, you can, you know, there's the sharding that people do, but that requires a lot of work and effort on the part of the developers.
Right. Something people try to shy away from wherever possible.
Right, and so that's not something that can actually fit into a cloud computing infrastructure. So if your app needs to expand beyond what you can do in a single relational database machine, then you are going to have to know about that as the developer, and how you can change your app to take advantage of multiple machines spread across in the data center.
Right.
And so that's, you know, CouchDB fits really strongly with the cloud computing model in that it scales out without you having to worry about changing your model.
Right. I saw some mentions of GeoCouch. Fill us in on that.
So GeoCouch, we're really excited about that. That is a geospatial indexing engine that sits on top of CouchDB or integrates with CouchDB. And then you can do all sorts of geospatial stuff. So you can pull addresses out of documents and then index those, and then, you know, do your regular searches. So real estate is a prime example of that.
So I also hear about graph databases. right. as a way that to really fit into geospatial. Is it similar to that, or
the graph database stuff? I've had a hard time figuring out what it's useful for beyond social computing and figuring mm-hmm. out, like, okay, so what are my friends like, and what are my friends' friends like? Beyond that, I've had a hard time finding actual use cases that make the graph databases work. Yeah. But
let's jump back into the big data arena. We didn't have cloud computing 5 years ago, at least in terminology and general understanding. We didn't have big data and NoSQL 5 years ago in the way that it's really gone crazy in the last couple of years. What's your take on the whole market there? I mean, you talked a little bit about the pain of sharding, but you know, we have a bunch of different kinds of solutions. Tell us sort of, you know, your take on the whole explosion of NoSQL activity,
right. The
role of the document database compared to the key value store, compared to the column-based thing, and so forth.
So the scalability stuff, it generates a lot of interest in the community, but there are not that many sites, not that many users who actually need large amounts of data. It's great if you can pick a platform that lets you grow into large amounts of data, but you want something that is easy to use primarily. You just want to get your application out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, a lot of the growth of the cloud computing and interest is mostly just been around interest, and actually less users than you would think.
It's fun to talk about.
It is. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to talk about, how big it can scale out, how many machines I've got
right.
in my cluster. So it's great to give people that option, but in the reality is that most people aren't going to need that. And a single machine will work great. So you had some other things.
Well, I was just in terms of the document database
versus
a key value. There's different types of NoSQL activity, and sort of give us your take on the categories and where the document database sort of rules the roost.
Right. So I consider the difference between a key value store and a document database. I consider a document database to be a superset of a key value store. So a key value store like Cassandra. And it's also kind of like a document database, but the biggest difference is that the reporting models. How can you query the database, and how is it going to be indexed? If your key value store has a query model that it supports, then I would call it a document database. If it's just strictly, write a value, read a value, and you want to get that as fast and as scalable as possible, then that's just a pure key value store.
Gotcha.
So that's my take on the distinction between the two.
Gotcha. So another area, getting deeper into the technology, that's interested me is Erlang. Now, and that's a programming language that you use to do CouchDB. It's gained a lot of attention also in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Give us a minute overview of what is Erlang.
Okay.
And then I'm curious to get your take as to why it's relevant to CouchDB, but also why it's relevant to a lot of things that we see in the big data and the cloud computing world in general.
Absolutely. So I'm a huge fan of Erlang for back-end services, things that have to stay up and have to be reliable.
Makes it unique from that perspective?
So it's a functional programming language, and it's process-oriented. People talk about Erlang processes, and they're kind of like operating system processes. In that they are isolated, and you can communicate to them by sending them messages, and they can communicate by sending messages. But you can't look directly into what's inside the process from another process. And so that's one of the key things about Erlang, is that it's really cheap to spawn an Erlang process. It's almost as cheap as allocating a new object in Java. And then when you have these processes, they're autonomous. So because other processes can't look at them, they have to send messages. It makes it more scalable, so that you can actually spawn the processes on the same machine or spawn them across the machine. They communicate over the network. And then it makes it very reliable. So if one process bites the bullet and is overloaded with data, it can die without affecting other processes.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can affect other processes by sending in a message that says, "Hey, I died."
Right.
And then the other processes can handle that in a controlled fashion, whereas other systems, when things get into a bad shape, then it's kind of like everything in that VM So if you run low on memory, for instance, in Java, it has to run the whole garbage collection cycle over everything and try to recover. And once you've blown your working set, then and it's running the garbage collection, it's having to page to disk.
So it can be disruptive to other things that are happening.
Right. It can slow down the whole VM, and then different parts of the program that aren't related to the part that's failing become disrupted. With Erlang, each process, if something's using too much memory, it can just kill that process, and then other processes that are serving other users are unaffected.
Right. If my history is correct, I think it got started at Ericsson.
Yes.
Really more as a telecommunications networking kind of language, which is really, in my opinion, what we're dealing with cloud computing. Cloud computing architectures are much more like network architectures than conventional enterprise scale-up architectures.
Indeed. So it was designed for telecom. It was designed to be on network switches, and it was designed so that if one part fails, then other people who are having conversations or transferring data over the network switch, they're unaffected. And it's designed so that when a component fails, you have supervisor components that understand, hey, this thing's failed or it's no longer responsive. I'll kill it and restart it, and then bring the system back up. That's very difficult to do in many other languages, and Erlang was designed from the ground up to be able to do that for telecom purposes.
Right.
And telecom has a lot of the same exact concerns that databases have. It needs to be reliable. It needs to serve a lot of concurrency. You don't want one guy's activities to the server affecting another person's activities on that same server.
And in many ways, telecom represents the ultimate shared network.
Exactly.
Way more than computing in our conventional sense of it.
And Erlang, because it sits, it really is more of a back end thing. People think it must be a heavyweight a language, and it must use a lot of RAM and things like that. But it's actually remarkably lightweight. And the original switches that it was designed to run on are much more like were just single processes, and they weren't beefy machines with tons of memory and lots of disk. They were just basically for routing communication. So Erlang is actually designed to scale down.
What's the scarcity is the master of invention, or some quote like that, right?
Yeah. It's actually remarkably lightweight, and then the ability to distribute it across machines is intrinsic to the Erlang model.
Are there other areas where Erlang you're seeing people pick up as well outside of your focus with Couch?
I've seen it in quite a few database products. I've seen it in it's used widely in chat and XMPP. What is it? I think RabbitMQ is the Erlang message queue.
Yep.
So it's being used where there's anytime you have a back-end server process that just really needs to stay alive and despite being overloaded, it needs to be able to recover, things like that. That's where it's really making a lot of headway. And one thing that it's not, I wouldn't recommend it, and a lot of Erlang people might disagree with me, but I wouldn't recommend it for front-end web development.
Mm-hmm.
You're much better off with PHP or JavaScript or these other, lately it's JavaScript, but other languages for building web apps. Just Erlang is, its string handling isn't so great, and often that's what the front-end web apps are doing. You're just constantly mashing strings together and then sending that to the user. And it's a little bit unwieldy for that.
Right.
But if you do get it working in Erlang, it'll be really reliable and scalable.
Is that a little bit like the C++ Java argument?
Yeah, it is. It is. It gives you more power, more control, but it's probably going to slow you down in development.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier there's other folks doing some neat solutions around CouchDB. What's your take on the whole ecosystem and how do you see adoption, both through things you're doing, but other folks in the market?
So we've been seeing a lot of great adoption where people need something that's just really, really reliable and is easy to recover. So right now the BBC has a really large CouchDB deployment. They might be on their third data center now, but I know they have at least two data centers with clusters of CouchDB machines. And then those clusters are talking to each other over the WAN.
Yeah, I saw that case study on your website last night.
Yeah, and that they're serving 150 million requests a day out of that. The ops guys there love it. It just runs. Unlike a lot of other databases, they're not having to deal with, oh, what's corrupt today? What do I have to go and dig into and figure out what went wrong?
Right.
Just once you get it up and going, it just generally works without a whole lot of a problem.
So here's a big picture question. Is there a service in your mind that hasn't been built, that's sort of waiting to be built now that CouchDB has sort of reached this level of prevalence and maturity? I mean, what are a couple of the big picture ideas? Wouldn't it be great if somebody started and worked on X, Y, or Z?
Well, so basically all this effort that people are putting into web-based office apps.
The whole collaboration space.
Yeah, the whole collaboration space. So people are building web-based email for eons, but now we have word processors, document management, spreadsheets, and things like SharePoint, and where people need to collaborate. And so more of that is moving up to the cloud. If that were on when companies build that on top of CouchDB, then they have a tremendous advantage. So they're not just stuck in the cloud. They can now replicate that down to people's phones, to a server that sits in the office, and to people's laptops. And then it doesn't matter what their network connection looks like.
Let me ask you a sort of a side question to that. If I'm implementing a cloud service on top of CouchDB, and I'm relying on the devices that are in my food chain, if I'm a company or something, do I need CDN kind of functionality now, or is that sort of built in to CouchDB where I'm sort of pushing the content to the devices? Does the question make sense?
No, well, so a content delivery network is an excellent use of CouchDB. So you just make the update to one server, and then it'll replicate out to all the nodes. So this goes across data centers. Now, for pure content delivery, where it's like an Amazon or I don't know, is Inktomi, they're still in?
No, Akamai or something.
that's
what I was thinking of. Akamai might be a little different.
Right. So, if you have to really serve up a single file to a ton of users, a traditional content delivery network is probably the better way to go. But if you have a very large site that has a lot of different things on it that a lot of people will be hitting, and you can't necessarily predict who's going to be hitting what, and you need that to be replicated out in near real time, then CouchDB is an excellent choice for that.
CouchDB is an Apache project. Tell us a little bit about that process and how being an Apache project helps CouchDB overall, what the
pros and cons are. So when I joined IBM, that was part of what they wanted it to be, an Apache project, and I was happy to do it. At first, I was just happy because it got a lot of visibility with Apache, but Apache is also an excellent organization for protecting yourself legally. I've actually been a part of a lawsuit where one big company was suing another one over sync technology in the mobile space. And that's a painful thing. If you're a startup and you get sued, that can kill you. And it doesn't matter if the other guy really has a case. If he's got the legal resources, that can kill you.
Right.
Apache is great in that they really protect you over patents and legal things.
So it gives you a lot of freedom as a software developer.
Right. So you don't have to worry about, are any of these big corporations going to come attack me and sue the pants off of me? The Apache Foundation is there to back you. And Apache has, they have pretty much all the big names in the industry. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Oracle, maybe not Oracle, but... The large corporations are part of the Apache Foundation, and they're members, and they also agree that they're not going to sue and everything.
If Oracle wasn't, Sun certainly was. So
yeah,
there they go.
Right.
Neat. Tell us a little bit about what we might see rest of the year. What roadmap details you can share about CouchDB?
So yeah, we are going to start making a big push into the mobile space. So right now we have CouchDB on Android. And we want to get that more whipped into shape, a little more 1.0 ready. Right now it's still early, but developers are welcome to try it out and use it. We're not going to stop anybody. And then we're going to also build onto iPhone and then RIM BlackBerry. And then we want to build some products that make it really easy for end users to create form-based apps right in their web browser, and then that'll be in the cloud and replicate down to phones. And so people can enter in information and then have that all aggregated in the cloud. And it doesn't matter if they have network connectivity or not. It's always there, always on.
So this becomes a real key component for people who want to address the whole portfolio of devices that are out there without having to design, you know, each one.
Exactly.
So any kind of, if I'm building an app, you're saying I could essentially outsource the data collection components of my app and let the underlying CouchDB processes and mobile components handle that. Is that?
Well, so one thing is that if you're using HTML5 and you build the front end on that, then you get that for free on pretty much every phone. You just have to change your CSS and maybe your JavaScript for the mobile phone factors. But then you've basically designed your site once, and then it just replicates out. And then you also have the ability, you don't have to use CouchDB as to serve up the HTML on the front end. So you could have a native iPhone app that also has CouchDB and is writing to it, and then replicating that up. So yeah, the ability to work across all these devices in different form factors and then store it all into a single database and then replicate that up to a centralized place is a key use case.
Neat. I saw some things on your website about CouchCamp, which is coming up.
Yeah,
we should probably include a note of that for listeners.
Yeah, so CouchCamp is going to be a great place if you want to learn about CouchDB and dive into the internals and meet a lot of people that are deep into Couch. So pretty much everybody here at Couch.io is going to be there. Most of the Cloudant guys we think they're going to be there. That's what they've said. Just a lot of people who are into databases in the NoSQL space are going to be there.
And when is it and where is it?
Now you got me. I think it's September 8th.
I think it's September 8th too.
It's actually in a summer camp with actual cabins in the woods about an hour north of San Francisco.
Similar to food camp,
I guess. Yeah. Exactly. So it's going to be a really fun thing for people to kind of get out of their normal environment and just hang out and have fun and geek out and have some nature around. So it's
great, gonna be a lot of fun. Great. Anything else that you wanted to share before we move on to the next section of the show?
Well, we got 1.0 coming out real soon. Hopefully this week we'll actually have 1.0 as released. That's just a huge milestone for us. So it's
Excellent.
Been a long time coming.
I'm Congratulations. Great. Well, let's move on. A quick wrap up on upcoming shows. Of course, we're in the summer season here, so not as much going on. But the open source conference hosted by O'Reilly is coming up in Portland in mid-July. If folks want to check that out. Of course, I think we'll have further detail wrap up of structure and velocity and other things when we do our next cloud computing roundtable. Want to jump into Cloud Tips, where we share products, services, other cloud computing tidbits for users. I'll go first. I've been spending a lot of time looking at companies that are merging sort of old school software technology functionality with web infrastructure. Many companies that have been on the show are doing that. I'm spending some time now looking at the video encoding space. And somebody sent me to encoding.com. And it's just a really neat way to outsource all of your video encoding stuff. Okay, you have to be, this is not consumer level, this is really if you're doing stuff as a small or larger business. But I think they've got an interesting model, and if you need anything related to that kind of encoding technology, take a look at encoding.com. I think it is definitely worth a look. Damien, how about you?
So I love Google Calendar. This is the first time in my life I've actually been able to use a calendar. And
even more than Lotus.
Yeah, I never use a Lotus calendar. I was really bad about that. I actually worked on that quite a bit. But I never used it. But the big thing with Google Calendar is that it's also on my phone. And that's
right.
What is really, really helpful. So,
yeah, well, if you have an Android phone, the integration...
Yes.
Really
so that's an example of integrating the cloud services with a phone that, for me, finally made it useful.
Yeah. Excellent. So Google Calendar for Damien. Well, that's a wrap-up for today's show. I want to thank everyone for listening. Damien, what are some websites or Twitter addresses that people can go to get more information about you, the company, CouchDB?
So couchdb.org is the will take you to the Apache site, and then couch.io is our company, and you can learn about our services and offerings there. And we'll have some more news coming out later, so definitely want to check out our site.
Good. And is there a company Twitter address if people want to stay up on the news?
Yeah, at Couch.io, and also at CouchDB.
We'll have those in the show notes as well. For me, Gary Orenstein, you can get updates at twitter.com/GaryOrenstein. And thanks again to our listeners. You can visit us online at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Just search for The Cloud Computing Show or click to the top right of our show homepage at thecloudcomputingshow.com, and we have a direct link to the iTunes URL. Thanks again for joining us, Damien.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great conversation. We'll see everybody next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.